Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, you seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
Talk to D Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago. Along with me, my co-host Jordan Malley, also a producer at 670 The Score. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. You can also shoot us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, that text and voicemail line is always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans, 331-979-1369. We'll get to some more mailbag content later on in the week, as well as a few additional fresh voicemails in that inbox. Appreciate all of you continuing to check in with us as we go through this long Bulls dry spell. Today's episode of Locked On Bulls brought to you by Axios and MyBookie. So, wanted to get to another edition of our Delete 8 mock draft. Jordan, we've gone through both Delete mock draft 1.0 and 2.0. And lo and behold, we did not end up at 7th in mock draft 3.0. We actually fell to 8th. So we will go through the decisions that were made from the 7 teams ahead of us, as well as our thought process. Also did a little bit of trade talk. First and foremost, though, Jordan, how you doing today? How's that move going?
Dude, moving sucks. I just absolutely hate it. And I know you're listening to this, and I probably sound like I'm coming out of a tin can, so I apologize to everybody. I'm not doing it from my car today, but from my sister's house, and you know, all my shit's already packed away, so I still don't have my mixer or my mic, but hopefully tomorrow, everything will be set up and it'll be ready to go and the sound quality will be back. So thanks for bearing with us, but man, I don't know about you, but I am just exhausted from moving, man. Moving just takes a lot out of you, that's for sure. But we're almost there. Tomorrow should be good. So how are you, though? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Fortunately, not in the middle of a moving process right now. So, and, you know, as crazy as that storm was that came through Chicago, I know it sounds like, you got pretty hard hit. A bunch of the burbs were hit pretty hard. My neighborhood here in Wicker Park, like, you know, a couple of small branches here and there, but, you know, kept power, nothing crazy. So we dodged that bullet, and now just back to hot Chicago summer, man. So, you know, we've been doing these Delete 8 mock drafts this offseason because the 8 teams that didn't qualify for the bubble have been, you know, trying to find different ways to keep ourselves entertained, keep our listeners entertained. We decided to do another go-round on this. Obviously, to no surprise, ended up staying at 7 in the first iteration of the mock draft. And with that 7th pick, selected James Wiseman, who we were surprised to see fall all the way down to 7th. In mock draft 2.0, we got a little bit of luck and fell into the 2nd spot in the lottery. So after the Atlanta Hawks selected LaMelo Ball, number 1 overall, we selected Anthony Edwards with the number 2 pick. And here we are, mock draft 3.0. We got not lucky, a little bit of bad luck, and fell from 7th to 8th. And really interesting the way that this 3.0 mock draft shook out, Jordan. I'm not sure if you were as surprised as I was to see some of these selections. The Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball, number 1 overall. Detroit Pistons taking Tyrese Halliburton at number 2. And here we are with the number 3 pick. The Minnesota Timberwolves eventually select Killian Hayes after engaging in some trade talks with not only After engaging with trade talks, I think they talked to a couple other teams, or at least one other team, but they also talked with us about a potential trade as we were interested in maybe moving up. Jordan, I know you're the one who handled those trade talks with Minnie at number three. What did those trade talks involve? Because I'm pretty sure you said they involved Zach LaVine.
Yeah, so in order to keep our draft pick at number eight at this point and to, I guess, extend the rebuild sort of how we were talking about yesterday. And if there isn't really a set plan for guys like Zach LaVine long-term and guys like Lauri Markkanen or Wendell Carter Jr., I think this is a perfect opportunity. And there's quite a few places I could see LaVine playing outside of Minnesota, but the story kind of makes sense if he would go back there, and Minnesota would obviously be interested. I mean, take the LaVine being there first in his career out of the picture, and Minnesota just loves Bulls players for whatever reason. There's a short history of Bulls players going to sign Minnesota, and it's weird. The Bulls have that same thing where they like to sign people from a certain number of teams too, so you see that path as well. But obviously to move up into the top three, it's going to take a lot, and as opposed to having to trade one, two, or maybe even three really key young assets in order to move up, or having to trade your number eight pick, I figured if Zach LaVine's not in this picture and Jim Boylan's coming back, what can you get from the Timberwolves that would be enticing enough to move up to number three? So I threw out a framework of a deal to the Timberwolves, and they were enticed. And it was Zach LaVine, and it was Zach LaVine for Jarrett Culver and their number three pick overall. And obviously, there would have to be more to the deal with Zach LaVine matching money and looking at the Timberwolves salary and all of that. That was the biggest hurdle, I think, talking with the host of the Locked On Wolves podcast. They said that the salaries might be difficult to match up, but they can definitely see Zach LaVine fitting into their system. And I mean, him and Karl Anthony Towns are best friends, and you're adding not only LaVine to D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, that's the three young stars that you could have locked up with a lot of control for the next 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know. What are your thoughts, though? If the Bulls were so enticed to move up to the top three and there was somebody they couldn't pass on, would you be willing to listen to offers for LaVine?
I'd certainly be willing to listen to offers. For me, it would be about getting enough in return that was, you know, like a quality package that went beyond just moving up in what everybody considers to be a pretty weak draft class. Because I don't see LaVine as a piece that a team would shell out a huge package for. Like he probably was, I don't think you can call him an all-star snub this season, but I think he was pretty darn close to qualifying for all-star status, and certainly may have ended up like that on a team with some more wins. But he's not a superstar or even a perennial all-star who commands these packages that that are, you know, involving several young role players or several young developing players and several draft picks. So I don't know if the Bulls would be able to garner that kind of package for Zach LaVine. So in addition to moving up to ship off LaVine, moving up from spot eight to spot three, I would want an additional future first and a quality young player. And I just don't know if, obviously you were the one negotiating these talks with Minnie in our mock draft. And those talks didn't go very far. And I'm guessing it's because Minnesota wasn't willing to cough up that much, because they didn't like Zach. I mean, like that's a team that's already had Zach LaVine, by the way. So I don't know how badly they want to get back a player that they traded away.
Well, the difficult thing with them was trying to get past the idea of having to match the salaries. Because if you look at it, James Johnson has a team option for next year for $16 million. And you have Jarrett Culver, who is the fourth highest paid player on that team at $6 million. So there's a huge drop-off between Russell Towns and Johnson compared to the rest of their rosters. So if you look at that, it's difficult. Like, how do you match up a $19.5 million salary and also get the value that you want back for LaVine without having to add other pieces to that? And look, you're not going to be able to attach a guy like Felicio or something to them. Although maybe you could, because he's only on a 1 year deal at this point and the Timberwolves would be off of his money, something like that. But I mean, that's just taking up a roster space for them. And that would be the difficult thing, is like maybe James Johnson would be able to pick up that qualifying offer, but this would be a deal that wouldn't be able to go down on draft night or on lottery night, just because you don't know about that qualifier for James Johnson. Now, if he picks that up in the offseason, and we're talking about October or November, Matt, then maybe the Bulls can make a deal and maybe the two teams draft the similar players that they liked and make the swap there. It does make it difficult, and I know, like you said, him going back to Minnesota – I don't know if that's in Zach LaVine's plans in terms of going back to a small market too. It doesn't sound like that seems like that would be going backwards in his career as opposed to forwards. But I mean, playing for Flip Saunders' son and Ryan Saunders, and then playing alongside his best friend in Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, there's something there that would be enticing enough to say, yeah, let me get out of this dumpster fire in Chicago if Boylan's not fired. So yeah, the talks didn't go far, but I think there's genuine intrigue, Matt, if you can trade LaVine and you feel like the top three players in this draft are worthy of coming to the Bulls and you can build around one of those guys. On top of it, keep your number eight pick, and you still got Markkanen and you still got Carter if you want to move those guys too. I mean, the new front office would have a lot to work with then, as opposed to having to kind of just stand pat and sit there and wait. So I guess we'll have to just wait and see. But that's kind of my mindset, was thinking it opens up two lottery draft picks that you would bring in. Then it opens up the idea of if Carter's unhappy with his positioning or Markkanen's unhappy with the coaching situation here, you can open up trade talks to move one of those guys. Because, again, remember Cowley said maybe Markkanen and Carter aren't the new front office's guys, or vice versa. Maybe Zach LaVine isn't the front office's guys, and they want to bring in a whole new group of guys to build once again. And I hope that's not the case, because that just means the rebuild's going to take twice as long.
Well, maybe you just call it a different rebuild and then it's only taken as long as it takes from step one. Starting over, calling it a different rebuild.
Matt, we've only had two rebuilds.
Right, exactly.
Remember, we've only had two rebuilds.
Just to ask John Paxson. All right, so Jordan, let's talk about the way that these other players have fallen off the board after our trade with Mini has fallen through. Before that, though, want to remind our listeners that today's episode of Locked On Bulls is brought to you in part by Axios. Start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boudou and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Check out Axios. Today's episode is also brought to you by MyBookie. Say it with me now, everybody. Sports are back, baby. We've been waiting for this day since March, and now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind. MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, a slam dunk, a triple overtime game-winning shot, all wrapped up into one. I love it. You love it. And that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams, and with the start of Major League Baseball in full swing, there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. If you're feeling good about your team's chances this year, I'm feeling pretty darn good about my Cubbies, who got a nice win over the Indians yesterday. Jordan, I know people are stoked on the South Side about the White Sox. Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them right now early in the MLB season. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future. In this case, that means basketball, hockey, and football. MyBookie's already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Jordan, speaking of overtimes and speaking of NHL, did you see that NHL playoff game that went to five overtimes last night?
I had to triple check, dude. Like, seeing the amount of shots that were on goal. At one point, Tampa Bay had 87 shots on goal. The Columbus's, I think it was like 62 or 63 shots. Like, that is absolutely insane. To be the team that walks out of there and loses, I mean, talk about an absolute series killer for the team that goes down 1-0 after playing 2.5 games.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was upset about the Blackhawks. I was tempted to put a little bit of money on the Hawks, you know, upsetting Vegas. And then I thought better of it because, that Vegas team is so good. And they certainly reminded all Blackhawks fans of that last night in a tough Blackhawks loss. But I was just glad that it didn't end up being one of those multiple OT games, because that's when the losses really hurt. When you stay up extra late, you know, a late puck drop at 9:30 Central Time, and then you go to extras, and it's like by the time the game finally ends, it's like, well, I might as well just stop drinking beer and start drinking coffee because it's basically morning. But those are the losses that really hurt.
Man, when they were on their cup run, the Hawks were, real quick before we go back to basketball, when they were on their run, I was in college still, and I lived in Eastern time zone. So all those games where they were playing at 10:30 at night, and some of those triple overtime games that they were going into, it was insane. Like, we were staying up during the week when some of us had classes at 7 or 8 a.m., and we were staying up till 2:30, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning because games had just ended. So I do miss those cup runs in the summer. And hey, Hawks are down only one game, but that's all right. I think they can battle back here, so we'll see.
Let's hope so.
At least that's something exciting for us, too.
Yeah, dude, I just love watching playoff hockey. Game 2 on Thursday, and you know, quick reminder and a quick plug in there. If you aren't already and you are a Blackhawks fan in addition to a Bulls fan, check out our guy Jay Zawoski doing great things with Locked On Blackhawks. All right, Jordan, so as we said, LaMelo goes number one overall to Charlotte. Tyrese Haliburton to the Pistons. And Mini doesn't trade down, keeps their pick, and selects Killian Hayes. So interesting here, picks 1, 2, and 3 are the consensus top 3 point guards in this draft class. Kind of similar to what we saw last year where, you know, there's a lot of point guards flying off the board in the top 5, top 7 of those lottery picks. And it makes sense because these are all organizations right now that don't really have that long-term answer of who's the point guard of the future. So all of those picks make sense to me. Then Atlanta at number 4 takes Anthony Edwards, a guy that some are saying is, you know, not consensus number 1 pick, but has been talked about possible number 1 overall, if not because somebody goes LaMelo number 1, certainly a guy who could go number 2. So that pick makes plenty of sense to me as well, a complimentary backcourt piece to Trae Young. Golden State Warriors stand pat at 5 and select Devin Vassell, another backcourt guy. The shooting guard out of Florida State. So a lot of guards flying off this board in the top picks. And then here is where my heart was crushed. At number 6, the Cleveland Cavaliers selecting the wing from Auburn, Isaac Okoro. That's the guy when I saw that we were falling to 8 in this mock draft 3.0. That's the guy I was hoping who would be there for us at 8. I thought it was maybe a 50-50 shot that he would fall to us that far. I think he could be a very interesting and exciting investment in that long-lasting question for this Bulls franchise right now. What is the long-term solution at the wing position? It's not Otto Porter Jr. It doesn't look like it's Chandler Hutchison. I don't think it's Denzel Valentine. We don't have that answer, and I really like what I saw from Isaac Okoro. So really disappointed to see him get snapped up by the Cavs at 6.
Man, I will tell you this. The more and more we do these mock drafts, the more and more it starts to make my head spin because I have no idea what this new front office is going to do. And if they get in a situation where a guy like James Wiseman falls all the way to past 6 or 7, and that's the position that you're in, that could be, like, if you think of it on surface level, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the Bulls to draft another big. But at the same time, like we had just said a couple minutes ago, maybe Carter or Markkanen aren't your guys. And what we talked about yesterday, Matt, that the Bulls, I don't think, like, if Carter's going to push back so much so that he's like, I just don't, like, I can play minutes at the center, but I don't want to be the primary center for the rest of my career. I just don't think I'm capable. It's not capability. I just think the injury stacking up and the frustration, I think he's starting to notice that might be starting to curb his game a little bit. He's like, I want to be in a better position for myself, and I don't blame him. So maybe they go with a guy like Wiseman who can be a true center for your team. And I mean, we didn't see a whole lot of him in college just because of his suspension. Then he opted out at Memphis after that. But the dude's got all the skills, Matt. Remember, I know people like the tournament's a bad thing too, because the tournament puts everybody's eyes on players that maybe were just hot for a couple of weeks and then they don't turn out to be great prospects. But people tend to forget the guys that don't hang around for a while or opt out or go in different paths. So those are the guys that you need to pay attention to. And look, Wiseman's got all the skills. He's got all the star power. He's, I think he was a top 10 or top 5 in his recruiting class too. So Isaac Okoro is a good pick, but man, like if star power starts to fall past 5, the Bulls got to consider taking best player available. And I think this front office will do that.
I think so too. I think when you're, like, you know, you said kind of starting a rebuild, and maybe we'll get some holdovers from this current rebuild that hasn't gone very well and hasn't gone anywhere to jump onto the next rebuild. But I think that AK and Eversley are going to build this out in their own image. And I think best available when it comes to a draft, especially a weak draft class, is the right thing to do. You got to add talent. You're not in a position where you can afford to swing and miss on a high-risk, high-reward kind of player. So with that, the New York Knicks are in the 7 spot, and they selected the combo power forward center, Onyeka Okongwu, out of USC. Now, he's a guy that has gone in the 5th spot in our first mock drafts, and then number 6 in the mock draft 2.0. He slides down one more spot here to 7 in mock draft 3.0. A quality player, and interesting to see the Knicks go with Okongwu over Memphis center James Wiseman. What are your thoughts on that, Jordan?
I don't know much about Okongwu, and I need to watch a little bit more of his game, but from everything that I've just been reading, and a lot of the comps that he's been getting, they're saying that he could be one of the best big men in this draft. And a lot of it comes from the defensive pressure and just the athleticism that he has. And he's massive too. And playing at USC doesn't have the allure that it did maybe even 10 years ago when guys like Nick Young and OJ Mayo played there. But still, I think he's got all the tools. And again, Matt, we talk about, like, look even back at last year's draft or 2 years ago. Think about all the guys that we didn't give much credence to or that flew up the draft boards and we didn't talk all that much about, and then all of a sudden they're starting to break out. Even you see that flurried across the first round too. So I think that's a good pick for the Knicks, but I mean, again, Matt, like, don't they have already like 8 power forward centers on their team? Why would they need another one?
Right. And that's the interesting thing to me, is that he projects as an undersized NBA center or more of a power forward. In a lot of ways, he reminds me of what Wendell Carter Jr. is in the NBA right now, in the sense that, like, they share a lot of physical traits. Just like Wendell, Okongwu is 6'9", so certainly more of an undersized center, but he makes up with it with a quality wingspan, just like Wendell Carter Jr., known as a quality rim protector who certainly needs to develop a little bit more on the offensive end. Like, a lot of what we hear about Okongwu sounds a lot like Wendell Carter Jr., whereas, you know, Wiseman 7'1", the more traditional center size. The other thing that's interesting to me here is knowing, as you said, the weird roster the Knicks are working with right now. They got a lot of work to do. They got a lot of front court pieces, none of which seem to really work well and mesh well together. They've got some chemistry issues with their roster construction. That this player who went in early in mock draft 1 and 2 is a player that they stayed away from, and that is the kid that everybody loves out of Dayton, Obi Toppin, who is, like, yes, kind of a power forward, but I could see him playing some wing, some small forward in the NBA. Another player who's 6'9", just like Okongwu. They left him on the board. Obi Toppin in our first mock draft went number 3 overall to Minnesota. He went number 4 overall, once again, to Minnesota in mock draft 2.0. Here we are in mock draft 3.0. Obi Toppin, a top 4 pick in our first two mocks, still on the board, and the Knicks pass him up in favor of Okongwu.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, just looking at Okongwu, like, where he's gone, even since a couple weeks ago, from the draft boards that I've been looking at. I'm looking at tankathon.com, which does an amazing job with breaking down prospects, big boards, where they project people at, and they have him as the second best player in this draft, and they think that he is the best power forward to come out of this draft, and Obi Toppin being number two. A name that pops up on this list, too, is Paul Reed from DePaul, Matt, which actually the Bulls have talked and interviewed with Paul Reed, so that's a guy to keep your eye on. I know I'm shifting away from our lottery talk right now, but keep an eye on Paul Reed because that could be a guy that goes undrafted. The Bulls sign as a two-way player, which the Bulls are really good at doing that. They're really good at finding guys that they like, they scouted, that they talk with. They don't go they go undrafted, and the Bulls scoop them up on those two-way contracts. But yes, back to Okongwu. I am a little bit surprised, and maybe it's just because Obi Toppin is so old. Like, we talk about old being 22 or 23, but that's what Obi Toppin is. He's going to be 23, I think, at the start of the NBA season. So first, before he even plays a game, he's sort of in that Chandler Hutchison age group where if he's not ready to contribute right now, a lot of these teams that still have a few years to rebuild before you're at a point of competing, that may not be in the same timeline as maybe some other teams. Like Golden State needs a guy that can contribute right away, and Toppin would be good if they ended up falling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point about Obi Toppin's age, which, like you said, are you a team that just needs to add a piece right now to plug and play, or are you a team that is looking for younger talent to kind of go along with the other young pieces you have right now? For the sake of development. So I don't know about you. I did think for a little bit about Obi Toppin when we became the team on the clock at number eight and was surprised to see him still available because he went top four in both of our previous mocks. But to me, like there is a little bit of that quality of competition when you look at how impressive he was at Dayton. Sometimes you see players coming from smaller programs and make that leap to the NBA, and the whole quality of competition thing turns out doesn't matter because they're just that good. And sometimes it does. You know, when you look at what Markelle Fultz was doing at the collegiate level and the struggles he's had in the NBA, that and then the age thing to me. I mean. Knowing what we've gone through with Denzel Valentine, knowing what we're going through right now with Chandler Hutchison, you know, the Bulls' previous front office loves taking these 3 or 4 year guys. They were obsessed with Chris Dunn, you know, a 4 year player at Providence, and none of them have panned out. So I don't. Maybe I just have this weird, irrational but somewhat rational fear of these older collegiate players right now. Because technically, you know, Obi Toppin's only a sophomore, but the dude is, as you said, going to be a 23-year-old rookie in the NBA. I don't love that.
So that left us with our choice. And, I mean, Matt, we've fallen in this scenario in mock drafts, I think, for the third year in a row. The first coming with the idea that it was Marvin Bagley, or we have to force ourselves to take one of the guards when Bagley was falling all the way to seven when we were picking. I'm looking at our mock draft from 2017 right now. I'm sorry, 2018. And we selected at number seven, Marvin Bagley. So the picks prior to us was Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr. to Dallas and Orlando. Guys like Trae Young, Jaren Jackson Jr., DeAndre Ayton, and Luka Doncic all went ahead of them. So outside of the Kings drafting Marvin Bagley and him sliding, we could see something similar again. I mean, in 2019, last year, Matt, we had a bunch of players sliding. Kobe White, we actually made the correct pick on Kobe White from last year. But this is, we're in a similar situation. And honestly, if they get to the point where this happens and they're at number eight and James Wiseman falls to you, you can go two routes. Draft him and immediately start taking offers on Markkanen and Carter and see what you can get there. Or you draft Wiseman and you immediately turn him around and say, all right, which contending team needs a big for the foreseeable future? We're open to discussions. And a team immediately that comes to mind, Matt, is the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, a team that could use some size. A team that, you know, lost a quality veteran big like Al Horford. That makes a lot of sense.
And a team who has three draft picks. They have three draft picks in this upcoming draft. They have the number 14. That was coming from Memphis. they have their own pick at number 27, and then they have the Bucks pick at number 30. So they have three picks in the first round, and obviously those that 27 and 30 pick isn't all that great, but maybe a pick just outside of the lottery at 14 or just at the very back end of the lottery being at 14 or 15. I mean, you could end up with a guy that slides like RJ Hampton, and you think about that. Think about being able to take multiple picks, fill your position at the wing, and also gain some capital. Again, keeping in mind that this front office, we may not understand or know what this front office's direction is for the next 6 months. And I'm hoping the draft will tell us more, Matt, and maybe our lottery positioning will, but I truly don't know what the direction is. And I feel like it'll be clear once we pick players, then we will kind of know. I think that'll be the true teller of, are we pushing for playoffs? Are we trying to compete and keep Zach LaVine here long-term? Or does this front office want to bring in their own guys and develop their own talent instead of keeping the guys that are already here from the past regime?
Yeah. The other thing about Wiseman to me that I hear some Bulls fans wondering about is, you know, along with LaMelo and Anthony Edwards, Wiseman's that other guy who has kind of always been consensus top three as long as we've been talking about this 2020 draft class. So whether it's a situation like this where he slides to the Bulls who stay at seven or maybe fall down to eight, or it's a situation where the Bulls jump up to say two, three, or four, In whatever situation where LaMelo's on the board, maybe Anthony Edwards gets taken, say the Bulls are at three, James Wiseman is there, do you take him when, as you were pointing out, this Bulls young rebuilding front court already has so many pieces that we're trying to figure out who stays, who goes, what's going on? Does Wendell Carter stay and shift to the four and they shift off Lauri Markkanen? Do they trade Wendell and keep Lowry and look for a different center? The other piece of that puzzle that I hear Bulls fans bringing up a lot is, well, what about Daniel Gafford? I mean, yeah, he's a second-round pick, but look at what he showed us in the short flashes where he was given an opportunity on the court last season. Why would you draft Wiseman if you have not only Wendell and Lowry, but also Gafford to develop? Personally, as much as I liked what I saw from Gafford this season, and some of his blocks and some of his high-flying dunks were the few silver linings of watching some bad, ugly basketball all season long, and I do believe he could be a useful player in the NBA, I don't think his ceiling is that astronomically high to prevent you from taking a potential stud like Wiseman. I don't know if you feel the same, Jordan, but to me it's like having Gafford on top of Lowry and Wendell and figuring out the Bulls' front court should not be enough of a reason for the Bulls to pass up James Wiseman.
No, I totally agree with that. And look, I mean, it's nice, but we're not playing 2K here, man. We're not playing 2K where you can all of a sudden turn Daniel Gafford in 5 years into the next superstar center in the Eastern Conference. Like, let's be realistic about what the expectations of Gafford are as a Bulls fan. We were surprised with what we saw, and I think a lot of people underrated what Gafford could bring. But that's exactly what he should be. A second-round pick should be a quality. If you can get quality role minutes out of a guy in the long term, that's huge from a second-round pick. But I'm not expecting him to go in there and start. You have to. If that is the case, if that's the case where Daniel Gafford is all of a sudden being developed to start, you made major screw-ups with drafting Carter or Markkanen. That's first. But yeah, I'm with you. James Wiseman, like, I think that's what James Wiseman, I think, like, not letting star power just fall just because you feel like you already have guys there locked in position. Nothing is safe. No one is safe, I think, outside of Coby White. I would say he's probably the safest out of anybody on this team right now, but you can't make plans for anything or anybody on this direction because we don't know what this front office wants to do.
Yeah. And this is a situation where best available, you know, we're at eight. We talked about the fact that Obi Toppin was somewhat surprisingly still on the board. The other name that went in both of our, delete eight mock drafts in round one and two, the international prospect, Denny Avija, he went is sixth pick to the Knicks in mock one and seventh pick once again to the Knicks in round two. He and Obi Toppin and Wiseman are like the three players that we would consider at eight. And if you're talking about best available with the most upside, that is undoubtedly James Wiseman, and it doesn't matter that he's a center and you already technically have two centers in Wendell and Gafford. One of them is a second-round pick whose ceiling is capped. The other one is a guy who's telling you, I'm not a center, I'm a power forward. So to me, it's pretty simple, especially considering the players that went off the board. We talked about how, you know, picks 1, 2, and 3, boom, 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 the top point guards in this draft class, when maybe that's something the Bulls might be looking for. We talked about how the definite best pick of the litter when it comes to the wings in this draft class, Isaac Okoro, is off the board. Another front court piece, it's kind of a combo forward slash center, Okongwu, off the board. And a couple of shooting guards in Edwards and Vassell. So it's like Wiseman seemed like a very no-brainer kind of answer there. Like, as we were talking about before, this new Bulls front office has a lot of work to do rebuilding, and you can't pass up the surefire lottery kind of talent that everybody believes Wiseman to be, even if it means you got to figure out how to deal with the logjam in your front court.
As we kind of wrap this up, let me ask you this, and we'll leave this with our listeners as well. Is there a position that the Bulls could talk with Golden State if Golden State ends up getting screwed? And by getting screwed, I mean like falling from where are they positioned right now as far as the lottery?
They're first, which is interesting because in round one of our mock drafts, they did have the number one pick. In round two of our mock drafts, they fell to fifth, and they fell to fifth again in this third mock draft.
So I just hit the sim lottery button, and the first three teams at the top are Minnesota, Golden State, and Chicago. This is actually perfect. Is there a scenario in which Minnesota selects somebody other than Edwards or Lonzo Ball? I mean, not Lonzo Ball, LaMelo Ball. And Golden State either is willing to move back a pick and the Bulls are forced to move up in order to get either one of those guys. Or maybe say Golden State gets screwed so much where Chicago ends up at number two and they fall all the way to, what, 4 or 5? Is there a scenario where you could see a trade maybe being talked about? And that being because Golden State wouldn't end up with one of their guys that can help them right away, right? You would have to draft and develop those guys in the timeline that Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are on. And same thing with Draymond Green. I mean, you've got 3 years left of all of those guys, and Steph Curry, you've got 2 years left of him. So I think they're trying to be on a path of a second wave of hopefully contending and getting back to where they were. You don't want to waste the years of Thompson or Curry. So the only trade I could see is if the Golden State Warriors are looking to pick up an asset, maybe free some money from that Wiggins deal and be open in the summer of 2021 to add another piece to Thompson and Curry, where they'd be so much so enticed to do that, where they would be willing to trade maybe a number five pick away. Would you take on 3 years of Andrew Wiggins money, trade Otto Porter to Golden State to pick up a number five pick? And that would mean that you would have two of the top five picks in this draft.
Ooh, man. I don't know if there are many contracts in the league right now that I want less than that Wiggins contract. I mean, he certainly proved some doubters wrong to a point this season. The kid can score. We've always known that the kid can score. But to me, it's still a contract where the dude is not giving you the production of what you're paying him. Obviously, you can, of course, say the same thing for Otto Porter Jr., given the contract that he's on and the $28 million option that he will certainly pick up to stick around the Bulls this coming season, or at least to start. So, no, I think my answer would be no. I would not do that. You love the idea of having two of the top eight picks in any draft, but to me, I don't think it's worth it in this draft class, which it's an unfortunate thing to have to say over and over again. When you're a lottery-bound team, a rebuilding team, and you're looking for that franchise-changing talent that for the Bulls kind of has to come through the draft, at least in recent history, because your team has not expressed an ability to execute trades successfully to get star players, and you have failed time and time again to land those star players in free agency. So getting the franchise-changing kind of talents, the draft is the best bet. And, you know, in a couple of pretty awesome draft classes in 2019 and 2018 and 2017, you kind of missed. I'm not saying it's curtains for Lowry and Wendell, but you didn't get the primo talents in those draft classes. Certainly, Bulls fans were excited about what they saw from Coby White at the tail end of this season, but I don't think he's the primo talent of that draft class compared to, Ja and Zion. Those are the draft classes where you're thinking, hell yeah, give me two of the top eight picks. For me, in this draft class, it is not worth it taking on Andrew Wiggins' contract.
Would you trade Carter? Would you trade Carter or Markkanen and Otto Porter Jr. for Draymond Green and their pick? Or something that's a framework like that?
Ooh.
Draymond's owed about $10 million less over the course of a couple years. Like, he's owed around 22. I think it goes to 24 and then 25. But he also has a year longer of control. A year longer on his contract than Wiggins does.
I'll tell you this. I like that idea better than I like the taking on Wiggins contract idea.
Because the only thing I can think of here is, before any Bulls fans get absolutely enthralled and ready to go to Twitter and absolutely rage your text line and voicemail line, this is just hypotheticals. I'm just talking through stuff. And it's interesting to talk this way because this is how a lot of front offices, I would feel on the surface, the very, very surface, talk. You know, they talk about every team. What teams could you make deals for? What's good? What's not? What are all the scenarios in Golden State? There is a scenario where the Bulls pass up Golden State, and Golden State's talked about. Go read a couple articles about how Golden State wants to prepare for this draft. They want to focus in key in on very few people. There's a couple guys that they like, but outside of that, if they fall and it's worst case scenario for them, they may be looking to trade away that pick in order to add an asset or to free up some cap space, because that's going to hurt them too. They're going to have a whole lot of cap space to play with here unless they end up with the number one or number two overall pick. Then they don't have to worry about it for a while. But Draymond Green, I think, is going to cost you more. So you would have to probably give up Carter or Markkanen, whichever the Golden State likes better. And I would say Otto Porter. And then you're probably looking at having to give up another draft pick or another player on top of that in order to take their draft pick and to take Draymond Green too. So it could get weird and it could get difficult. But I'm just thinking from the prospect of, and this is me in my own world, LaMelo Ball and James Wiseman coming out of the draft in the top five picks, and you take both of those dudes, put that next to Coby White and put that next to Zach LaVine. Man, I don't know how you couldn't be excited if something like that went down. And then Draymond Green's on your team too, so your starting five is Wiseman. I guess your starting five would be Carter, Draymond Green, Zach LaVine, Coby White, LaMelo Ball.
So you're talking about playing Zach at the three there.
You'd be forced to. Otherwise, you would have to play. I mean, you really don't have any choice, right? If LaMelo Ball is going to be your point guard.
Yeah.
You would almost have to play the system that Jim Boylan's been playing.
Right.
Where he's like, let me throw three guards out there and let's undersize it.
Look, I love the idea of that lineup offensively. Defensively, it's terrifying. Now, yes, you have the pairing of Wendell and Draymond, you know, two very quality defenders, but beyond that, and you know, you can have Wendell match up with the bigger, more threatening, you know, center or you know, power forward of your opponent, and then have Draymond take the other, but then you're still asking Zach to what, guard like a quality wing? And then a Kobe LaMelo backcourt defensively. Not great.
Yeah, I don't know how great LaMelo is on defense or what he projects to be, but I mean, the dude is 6'9" and he's got a wingspan damn near close to 7 feet. So, I mean, in an ideal world, now I'm talking in 2K manager mode here, where in an ideal world, and I just told people not to do that, but we're going down that path for a second. In an ideal world where you could flip-flop and you could have coming down on defense, you could have LaMelo switch off and guard the wing and have Zach come up guard the either primary ball handler or secondary ball handler. That might make some sense. But again, that's just me thinking through some of these other trade scenarios and things that could possibly happen.
Right.
Because again, we don't have any evidence of what this front office might do.
And we have plenty of time to speculate, because that's where we are right now in this expansive Sahara Desert sized offseason that the Bulls and their fans find themselves in right now. So fun stuff with Mock Draft 3.0 with the Delete 8 teams. The Bulls walking away with James Wiseman once again, this time at number 8 after snagging him at 7. The first time around. So that'll about do it for today's episode. Thanks again to our sponsors, both Axios and MyBookie. Let's do some sports betting, people. It's summertime. We've got a bunch of different sports that are usually not going on right now. Why not throw some money at them, make some money, and always get your latest news and news analysis from Axios. Also a reminder to check out those sister shows, especially Locked On Blackhawks, which Jay Zawoski is the Blackhawks, are fighting the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. Locked On Cubs and Locked On White Sox for your daily baseball needs, news, and takes. For my partner, Jordan Malley, Matt Peck, saying thanks so much, as always, for listening, Bulls fans. And, of course, before we get to mailbag at the end of the week, throw us more questions, comments, and anything Bulls and NBA related. 331-979-1369 is that number. We will talk to you again tomorrow with a fresh new episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Peace.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com